Thank you for downloading from Richmond First United Methodist. Support for this podcast comes from your generous gifts and donations. You can visit us online at www.richmondfumc.org.
Today's scripture reading is from Romans chapter 8, verses 28 through 30. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. For those God foreknew, he also predestined to conform to the image of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. And those he predestined, he also called. Those he called, he also justified. And those he justified, he also glorified. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
So we are in the beginning of a new worship series starting this morning of messages that you have helped to design by the questions that you've asked. We had you write down questionnaires. Some of these questions we can deal with, you know, in a few sentences, and others are going to take a little more work. But one that I heard this week that I wanted to give a few sentences to, because we just came out of the series about money. If you weren't with us, we talked about how God coaxes his people to generosity and blesses them in their lives when as we become generous. And someone asked the question this week, what's the difference between that and the prosperity gospel, so-called prosperity gospel? Because there is a certain sort of preaching out in the world that maybe you've heard that says if my faith is strong enough and if I'm faithful and obedient, then God will make me rich and I won't ever get sick and I'll always be healthy. And this is not what we believe, and it's not what I have been trying to say for 4 weeks. What I've been trying to say is something very different, that with what God has given us, if we give it over to his purposes, it becomes a means of grace. And by means of grace, I'm talking about those places and things you can do in your life that you know will bring God present and make it and feel him close to you. Some of you do this by walking in the woods. I'm one of those people. If there's running water at the bottom of a gully, I can feel God's presence there as I hear it trickle through. Some, I turn to scripture and hear God speak, or in prayer, or in song, or in fellowship with others. Different things for different people, but there are some things that are so reliable. For example, when we come together and sing together and worship, that you just know God is going to be there. And what I was trying to help us understand, because so many of us miss it, is that generosity is one of those opportunities that when we are generous, God shows up in a way that we can see and feel. It's not a blessing that, you know, if I give the church $5, God will give me 50. No, it's anytime I open my heart to other people, God shows up. A harder question that we're going to deal with in a little bit more, with a little bit more time today, is the question of free will and predestination. Is the question, does God have my life all scripted out in advance and everything that happens he knew beforehand and he predestined? Or do I have human agency? Do I have the opportunity to change the course of my life by the decisions that I make? I've skipped ahead a little bit. So now that we've got up on the screen, we're going to play a little game before we go on. It's called Would You Rather. How many of you have ever played Would You Rather? Okay. How many of you would rather not play Would You Rather? That's question number one. Okay. But it goes like this, simply. We're going to give you two choices, and you have to pick one or the other one if you are playing. You cannot sit there and not participate. That's not permitted here, okay? So here's question number one. Would you rather listen to the radio or make your own playlist on whatever your app is, okay? We're going to have you raise your hand right now if you'd rather listen to the radio. Okay, good bunch of radio listeners here. Raise your hand if you would rather put together your own playlist. That one looks about 50-50 to me. Number two, would you rather choose where you and your friends are going to go out to eat or let your friends choose? Okay? Who wants to be in the driver's seat here? Raise your hand if you want to be the one that picks where you go out and eat. Okay. Raise your hand if you would rather your friends decided for you. Okay. Yes, you're my people. This might be the most stressful thing I face every week is when Kim says, where do you want to go eat? And we've got a real picky eater in the house. And Michael, sometimes I would just, please, Michael, tell us where you want to go. I'll take you anywhere. 4 hours, I don't care. Okay. Would you rather ride in the passenger seat or drive the car? Okay, passengers, raise your hands. Depends on who's driving. Got you there. All right, drivers, raise your hands. Okay. Would you rather watch Netflix or live TV? Okay, where's the Netflix crowd? All right. Where's the live TV crowd? All right. Would you rather order your favorite food at a restaurant or ask the waiter or waitress to surprise you? Okay. If you're placing your own order, raise your hand. All right. If you have ever said to a waiter or waitress, yeah, surprise me, raise your hand. Okay, a couple of times. I talked to someone first service who said, no, I do that at Olive Garden with the soups. So it's kind of, he narrows the scope and then lets her decide. Okay. Would you rather have someone make every decision for you or make every decision about your own life? Who wants someone to make all of their decisions for them? Raise your hand. Oh, we got one or two. Okay. More than I thought. Who's ready to make every decision about their life? Okay. Yeah. That's the thing, isn't it? I mean, that's what we say we want, is we want to be free. We want to be agents. We want to determine our own destiny. That's what we say we want. But sometimes it's not. I mean, we had some examples just now of those small decisions from day to day that you just, I know when they were getting ready to put Aldi in, out by Walmart, my mom and dad are big Aldi shoppers down in Georgia, and they were talking about how much we were going to enjoy having an Aldi, and they said, now the problem with Aldi is they won't have like five brands of the same thing, they'll have one. I said, well, that's for me right there. I hate standing in front of the shelf and trying to figure out which can of green beans I'm going to buy. I don't like that. We have satellite TV at my house, something like 40 million channels, something like that. And when they came and put it in, the first thing I did, tell me you didn't do this, is go through and create a favorites list. It's got five channels on my favorites list, and those are the ones I scroll through. And to be honest with you, usually what I watch is whatever is on when I hit the on button, because I just don't want to go through the trouble of trying to make that. And then folks, there's the ones that really matter, right? There's those decisions. You come to the fork in your life's road, and you know that it matters whether you go right or left. You know that these roads are never going to come back together again. You know that if you go this way, it's going to mean one thing for the rest of your life. And if you go this way, it's going to mean something else. And you're standing there frozen on the spot because you know this decision matters. And you want to get it right. And wouldn't you just love someone to come along in that moment and grab you by the shoulders and shove you down one side or the other? I know people who pray this way. Lord, close all the doors except the one you want me to go through. Take the choice away from me. Just make it clear to me what I'm supposed to do. We say we want choices. We say we want the responsibility of choosing our own path, but oftentimes it's actually quite frightening and uncomfortable. And so when we come to a text like what Pam read just a few minutes ago with these wonderful words about foreknowledge and predestined and chosenness in them, sometimes we want to grab hold of those and take them to ourselves. And this notion that God has it all scripted out and it's going to be okay and whatever happens, it must be God's will, right? Because God is sovereign. And so whatever happens must be His will. Just a little over 30 years ago, I remember this because it was all over the news for several days. On May 14th in 1988, a group of youth coming back from a trip to Kings Island in a bus. There was a driver going the other way who crossed the median on the interstate and wound up plowing into this bus headlong on I-71 right around Carrollton, Kentucky. The bus caught fire. 24 kids and three adults died in that fire. It was a church group. They'd been to Kings Island for the day. They're on their way back home to Radcliffe, Kentucky. I remember it because there's still a marker there, or at least last time I went up that road there was, on the shoulder of I-71. I also remember it because they interviewed the pastor of that church in the days shortly afterwards, and he said something, I don't have the exact words now, but he said something like this. He said, I think some of those kids have been doing something they weren't supposed to be doing at Kings Island, and that the Lord came to take them home before they went too far down the wrong path. That's what he said. Later on, he apologized to his church. I learned from one of our members at First Service was a counselor, a responder to that crisis. And she heard that the pastor later apologized for saying that thing. But I know what was going through his mind is, how do I make sense of this? If everything that happens is God's will, then what we've got to figure out what he was up to in this moment. And we believe, don't we, that God has the power to do anything. Theologically, we call it the sovereignty of God. And it's a problem, isn't it? If God can do anything, then why wouldn't he make everything always turn out the way he wanted it to? And if God is always going to make it turn out the way he wants it to, then do we have any choice in the matter? And we read this passage, and it talks about us being, our paths being foreknown, and our destiny being predestined. And there's a part of us that would throw our arms around that as a sort of a special promise in a way. The problem is, though, to understand these verses in that way, you just have to lift them right out of the book that they're in. You have to take them out of all the context, because the context of these verses, chapter 8 of Romans, is all about deciding whether I'm going to live by the Spirit or by the flesh. That's what that chapter is about. The book of Romans is about the destiny of humanity since the beginning of time, when we chose not God instead of God. Read the first chapter. You won't get all the way through the first chapter before you realize that this is a book about people making good and bad choices. That's what it's about. Paul reminds us that at the beginning of time, humanity had a choice. Adam and Eve in the garden. We talk about Eden, and we always picture, you know, the beauty of it and the perfection of it. But here's something to remember. God created it. He said it was very good. But he created it with a tree in the middle of the garden. They had to tell Adam and Eve not to eat from. In other words, right in the middle of the garden is a choice. It's not tucked away in a corner. It's not behind a locked door. There is no riddle they have to solve to get the fruit from the tree. All they have to do is walk by it every day and decide yes or no, God or not God. It is built into the world as God created it, that we would have choices. And if you think about it, the whole rest of the Bible story is the story of God trying to draw his people back to him and watching them make the same sorts of mistakes over and over again, two steps forward, one step backwards, because they cannot consistently choose God over not God in the lives of their own lives. That's the story that we're living in. So the problem with the text is we read it through modern eyes instead of in the culture in which Paul wrote it. And there are a lot of texts that we read this way. Because in the modern world, especially here in the United States of America, we have an overwhelming tendency to think it's all about me, right? And so we read this story about being foreknown and predestined and so on. It must be about me. Well, yes and no. If you look at it carefully, Paul is talking about his people as a whole, not necessarily as individuals. Here's how I think about it. My science teacher, when I was in sixth grade, blew up a balloon in front of us and described to us what was happening. He said, you know, all of the air molecules inside this balloon are bouncing off of each other and pushing out on the envelope of the balloon. Now, any modern scientist will tell you they could not possibly calculate where each individual air molecule was at any given time. It can't even be measured. But we can know, it can be predicted that when I blow into that balloon, it's going to inflate, because as a group, that's what the molecules are going to do. And what Paul is saying here is that God has a destiny for his people as a whole. He has known since the beginning of time that he was going to create a holy people that would be a light to the world, that was going to guide the people to draw into closer relationship with him. He's known since the beginning of the time that he was going to create a people that in some way manifested Jesus before others, that look like Jesus. He's known that. What I suggest to you is that what God doesn't know in the moment is whether I'm going to be one of them, what choice I will personally make as a human being. Well, that's an odd way to run a universe, isn't it? I mean, if you see how you want it to be and you're God, wouldn't you just, you know, do the genie thing or whatever and cause it to... Why would God put the choice in the middle of our lives and leave it up to us every day to decide whether we're going to follow or not follow? Why would he leave those kinds of important decisions in the hands of fools like us? So a philosopher by the name of Soren Kierkegaard, a Christian philosopher, he tells a parable. Now, the parable goes like this. The king of the land was traveling through the land in his coach, surveying all that he ruled over. And he looked out the window of the coach and fell in love. First sight. Never seen her before, but as soon as he laid eyes on her, he thought she was the most beautiful woman that had ever been born, and he wanted to marry her. She was drawing water from the well in front of her parents' house, which was part of a small farm, obviously barely getting by. His first response was to reach out on the and pound on the side of the coach to signal the driver, stop, stop, stop. And he was going to get out of the coach and he was going to run across to her and tell her how beautiful she was, and how he wanted to take her to become his queen and live with him in the castle happily forever after. And he had his arm out the window when he rethought that. He said, no, now wait a minute. If the king comes out of the royal coach and walks up to a peasant girl and says, I want you to be my wife, the queen, she will comply. That's what peasants do when the king asks for things. She will marry me. She will be my wife. She will have my children. But I will never know if she really loved me. And so he goes back to the palace and he takes off his kingly garb. He borrows clothing from one of his servants and he dresses like a peasant. And he went back and he introduced himself to her. And they got to know each other as he went back day after day after day, and he wooed her until she fell in love with him and he fell in love with her. And then he asked her to marry him, and only after she had said yes, he said, oh, I live in a little place up the street you might like to see. I'm not sure I fully understand this. But apparently, it was more important to God that we could choose to love Him than it was that we got everything right. Because love that is not chosen is not real love. So we put the tree in the center of the garden, in the middle of your life, in my life, so that every day we have the choice between God or not God. And oh, so often we wander away. There's a hymn in our hymnal here. We sing it from time to time at the early service. It's called, O Love That Wilt Not Let Me Go. It's a beautiful song, beautiful words. But today I'm thinking about the love that will let me go, that will turn me loose and let me wander, and the sort of heart that says, when you are done wandering and ready to choose God instead of not God, I will be here waiting for you, because it's what I have always wanted. So history is on this grand slide into a glorious thing. We are on our way towards the inevitable end in which everything that God wanted the world to be is going to come to pass. And justice and mercy and love will flow like rivers. There is that day. And nothing can stop it. All of the powers of hell cannot stand against it. The only question left is the same question that Adam started with. Are you going to be there or not? That decision's up to you.
To hear more sermons, find out more about us, and see what's going on in our community, visit us online at www.richmondfumc.org. This has been Richmond First United Methodist Church. Growing disciples who make a difference.